Welcome to No Compromise Radio, a ministry coming to you from Bethlehem Bible Church in West Boylston. No Compromise Radio is a program dedicated to the ongoing proclamation of Jesus Christ, based on the theme in Galatians 2, verse 5, where the Apostle Paul said, "But we did not yield in subjection to them for even an hour, so that the truth of the gospel would remain with you." In short, if you like smooth, watered-down words to make you simply feel good, this show isn't for you. By purpose, we are first biblical, but we can also be controversial. Stay tuned for the next 25 minutes as we're called by the divine trumpet to summon the troops for the honor and glory of her King. Here's our host, Pastor Mike Abendroth.
Welcome to No Compromise Radio Ministry. My name is Mike Abendroth. Who said these things? Who teaches these things? Who am I? I guess we could play 20 questions, but I'm going to give you a variety of quotes, and then you tell me who said them, okay? Kind of a who am I game. That's a new feature on No Compromise Radio production. Regarding the virgin birth, it impinges on the simple idea of Jesus as our example. When Jesus did a miracle, they were symbols of what he still can do. It is not that Jesus is God. Nowhere does the New Testament identify Jesus in God. That which would be a miracle in one age or in one society is a commonplace in another. Even 50 years ago, people would have regarded it as a miracle to be able to sit in a room and look into a glass-fronted box and see plays being acted, games being played, events happening hundreds and even thousands of miles away. It is not that Jesus is God. Time and time again, the fourth gospel speaks of God sending Jesus into the world. Time and time again, we see Jesus praying to God. Time and time again, we see Jesus unhesitatingly and unquestionably and unconditionally accepting the will of God for himself. Jesus said, "He who has seen me has seen God." There are attributes of God I do not see in Jesus. I do not see God's omniscience in Jesus, for there are things which Jesus did not know. Who is this person? Who am I? This person went on to say, "I am a convinced universalist. I believe that in the end all men will be gathered unto the love of God." God is Father. He is indeed Father more than anything else. No father could be happy while there were members of his family forever in agony. No father would count it a triumph to obliterate the disobedient members of his family. The only triumph a father can know is to have all his family back home. The only victory love can enjoy is the day when its offer of love is answered by the return of love. The only possible final triumph in a universe loved by and in love with God. Who am I? Who is this person? I'm about done. I was done after the first quote with you, but this is a for emphasis. Here we have the extraordinary thought of an experimenting God who needs men to correct his mistakes. But God is not the omnipotent God. He is the struggling God. It may be heresy, but there is something tremendous in the thought of a God who is fighting the battle of the universe and who has deliberately made himself dependent on men. It is not important that we believe in literal demons. And I'm saying, saving the worst for last. I believe that this Jesus so appeared to his men that they were convinced that he had conquered death. I do not know what exactly happened. Who said those things? Here's the strange thing. Here's the interesting thing on No Compromise Radio. Almost every pastor, I know that's a blanket statement, I know that's a general statement, but almost every pastor has this man's books. Many pastors use this man's books for help in their study for sermons. I'm looking over the White Cliffs of Dover. I'm looking over to my commentary section, and I see this man's books. Now, of course, I have unbelievers in my library. Not real unbelievers, but I mean the books of unbelievers in my library. I'm trying to think of one. I have Voltaire's Candide because it's an interesting take, the wrong take on providence. I have Charles Finney. I think Finney If he believed what he taught, I don't see how he could be a believer. I hope he's in heaven, actually. Be fine by me. I don't want anybody not in heaven. Let's see. But I have this man's books. They're right over there. People use them all the time. Now, this generation of students maybe don't use them as much, but especially the last generation, the last 50 years, if I had to pick one commentary series that was in every pastor's library in the English-speaking parts of the world, it would be this man who I just said all these things. Not about, but I quoted him. That is a strange thing to me. He's got over 20 books published at the time of his death, and he was a liberal, and he denied anything supernatural. And what was his name? We're 5 minutes into the show. What was his name? His name was William Barclay, B-A-R-C-L-A-Y. And his most famous popular books are commentaries on the New Testament Daily Bible Study Series. He's a liberal, and when you see any miracle in the New Testament, he's got an answer, at least in his mind, a credible rebuttal to that. So my question for you today is, do you believe in the supernatural? Do you believe in God? Because if you do, you believe in supernatural things. What Barclay tried to do is he explained, or tried to explain everything naturally, modernly, modernistically, anti-supernaturally. And so I've been studying the book of Jonah because I've been teaching it on Sunday mornings and a few little shows here on No Compromise Radio. And I am face to face again with God, who does great supernatural things. And of course, the one that people focus on the most is when the great fish swallows Jonah. And the Lord appointed a great fish to swallow up Jonah, and Jonah was in the belly of the fish 3 days and three nights. Now, there are other supernatural things that go on in the book of Jonah that we'll talk about in shows to come. Probably the biggest one, having people being saved, right? That's the most supernatural thing ever, is when someone who is a pagan, someone who is dead in trespasses and sins, becomes alive. And so that is a great miracle. Now, Jonah chapter 1, verse 17, here's a supernatural thing as well. God appoints a great fish to swallow up Jonah. Just knocked down my coffee. At least it was Pete's coffee. Dr. DeHaan wrote a little book on Jonah, and here's how he starts a chapter. It's interesting. When a dog bites a man, that is not news. But when a man bites a dog, that is news. In the same way, when a man catches a fish, that is not news. But when a fish catches a man, that is news. So if you're a liberal, I don't know what Barclay did with it, but he had something kooky, I'm sure. If you're a liberal, what do you do with Jonah chapter 1, verse 17, which I think in the Hebrew Bible is Jonah 2, verse 1? Well, here's what the liberals say. I mean, because you've got to find a rationalistic, modern way of describing this, and so they said that when Jonah was thrown out of the ship, he landed on top of a real fish. He was on top of a fish, and then, you know, it escorts him someplace, I guess. Some people say that they threw Jonah out, and he landed on a dead fish, you know, big dead fish that was floating. Some people said, this is amazing, these are kind of fun. Some people say that he was thrown overboard onto another ship named Fish. The USS Fish. And it rescued him. Others say that he was thrown into the water and he was swimming around and a ship came by that had a fish on its prow. That's the explanation. And the last one that I'll give you for today is that Jonah dreamt all this, perchance to dream. He was dreaming it. Now, I've got a bigger question. Why is the book of Jonah so attacked? Well, the Red Sea story isn't attacked as much. Lot's wife's account isn't as attacked so much. The axe head floating. It seems on a general basis and a popular level, the liberals leave those alone. Oh, I know the liberals go after those, but it's not really in the news so much. Jonah's attacked because Jonah's time spent in the belly of the fish typifies the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus Christ. That's why I'm going to predict that in the age we live in today, with Hollywood's account of Exodus, Hollywood's account of Noah, we're not going to have a Jonah movie anytime soon. Everywhere you look in the Bible, you see God, the supernatural God, doing things. And so what I love about the book of Jonah, it reminds me who God is, and it shows me this miracle where God appoints the fish. God appoints sovereignly this fish to rescue Jonah. Now, I don't think he made the fish. God, of course, could have just made a fish to, you know, that second. The fish wasn't alive, and it wasn't a little baby fish, and then it grew up to be this big whale of a creature. I didn't say whale, whale of a creature. And so he created it. The language there is appointed. And so there was a fish that was alive, started off as a smaller fish, and God assigned or ordained or appointed it to go do something that was very amazing. We don't know what kind of fish, because the focus isn't on the fish, is it? The focus is on whatever it is, whatever kind of sea monster it might be. Some fish comes and swallows Jonah. I don't know if he saw the fish coming. I don't know if he was running out of breath. I'm not exactly sure. And here's what evangelicals end up doing. They try to find accounts of people living in fish and then say, see how it's possible. Now, maybe some of these accounts are true. I read them as if the writers say they're true. But if they're not true, it doesn't matter, because this is a supernatural thing. We're not trying to find, well, there's a certain kind of a wind that blows on the Red Sea occasionally, and if the water's not deep enough and all that, here's what happens. And we try to give natural explanations for supernatural events. Don't waste your time. There used to be a CBS series on in the early 90s that would try to explain all these things away. Now, people say, well, the neck of a whale is too small to receive a man. Some people think that the dogfish stomach is large enough that you could find a man in the dogfish stomach. They found a body of a man in armor in that. I think they found him dead. They are talking about sharks. They are talking about throats. They are talking about all kinds of things. Dr. Gleason Archer, a Christian man, writes, numerous cases have been reported in more recent times of men who have survived the ordeal of being swallowed by a whale. The Princeton Theological Review, October 1927, tells of two incidents, one in 1758 and the other in 1771, in which a man was swallowed by a whale and vomited up shortly thereafter with only minor injuries. So I've listened to liberals attack these situations. And for me, if these accounts are just lore, if they're just myth, if they're fable, if they're exaggeration, it doesn't matter to me, because if the God of the universe, who can make creatures, who can make the world, decides that the fish is going to be able to hold Jonah and God keeps him alive in there through natural ways or through supernatural ways, what do I care? Because fast forward from Jonah's time to the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus. That is a supernatural thing. When you think of Mark and how Mark shows the response to supernatural, there is a fear. It's frightening. It is amazing to see what happens when there's a supernatural event. People are afraid, and you can look at Mark chapter 16. The response at the end of the book in verse 8 of Mark 16 is they're afraid. Why are they afraid? Because the response to the supernatural activity of God is fear. So when you read cases about Francis Fox describing in 63 years of engineering, who says that scientific editors of the Journal des Debars in Paris, talks about whaling ships, the Star of the East, Falkland Islands, and it has James Bartley in it. He disappears, and they're going through the, you know, the, there's, if you've got a dead whale on the ship now, and they're cutting it up, and this guy comes out, and his face and neck were bleached with deadly whiteness and parchment. Okay, it's all fine if it happened, but the key point here, it's a miracle. It's a sign. It is the supernatural intervention of a God who intervenes, right? It's not an invention, but an intervention. And Jesus, we're going to learn in Matthew chapter 12, talks about this very thing. So if God can create, if God exists, it's no big deal that he does supernatural things. Because God, by definition, when you think of supernatural, what's the word mean? Supernatural, supra, above nature. He's above nature. Is God above nature? If God exists, then he's above nature. Machen said, Christianity depends upon the entrance of the creative act of God. Everything about Christianity hinges on the supernatural God. Machen said this, science, it is said, is founded upon the regularity of sequences. It assumes that if certain conditions within the course of nature are given, certain other conditions will always follow. But if there is to be any intrusion of events, which by their very definition are independent of all previous conditions, then it is said the regularity of nature upon which science bases itself is broken up. So Machen knew, you've either got Christianity or you've got liberalism. So when you read the Scotsman David Hume and his most famous essay of miracles, you have to judge miracles by nature. What does that do? Voltaire, you cannot believe in anything like that. I think G.H. Clark is right when he says, when one adopts a view of the world as God's creation, and when God is regarded as a living, active, personal being, the appropriateness of miracles depends upon God's purposes. In such a theistic worldview, where God desires to have some converse with mankind, the occurrence of miracles is no longer an anomaly. So if you believe in God, you believe that he does supernatural things. How can you account for this happening through natural laws? Well, you don't. I hope you believe in forgiveness. How can you believe in forgiveness without the supernatural intervention of God? Isn't that, according to 2 Corinthians chapter 4, a creative act? Yes. We need the supernatural intervention of God, because otherwise, how can we as humans do anything to help ourselves? Who can say I've made myself pure? Who can say I've forgiven my sins? Who could make their skin color be changed, or which leopard could change its spots? There are really two religions in the world, the religion of modernism and supernaturalism, liberalism and supernaturalism. Machen said the chief modern rival to Christianity is liberalism, and now it just shows itself in funkier forms. Emergent church. It's just liberalism. When you understand this, you can see the latest trend. Then there'll be another trend, because what happens to liberals? They die out. So they have the emergent church, and then now it's dying out. Something else will come. And Christianity and liberalism are two different things. And when you look at liberalism, what do you see? You see liberalism that would say something like this. Well, and this is all documented in Machen's book, Christianity and Liberalism, one of my top three or four favorite books of all time outside the Bible. Jesus is a moral teacher. And by the way, he's a great moral teacher. What does liberalism say? Well, you know, God's God, but he's open to things. He's dependent upon our free will. He wants us to just seek him. He's a God of love, pretty much only. Liberalism has a very low view of God, and if you have a low view of God, what does that do to your view of man? Answer, you got to have a high view of man. When the view of God goes down, the view of man goes up, and more specifically, vice versa. What about truth? What do liberals do with truth? Well, here's how we have truth. It's based on experience, not on the Word of God. I mean, Machen's book, printed by Erdmans in 1923, I think you can get online for free. It's a must, because when you see the liberals, oh, down with supernatural, Jesus is just a good moral teacher, instead of an object of faith, the object of faith, view of God and view of man that are wrong, experience trumps the word. He's prophetic in some of this stuff, with a small p. And what else do liberals say? Well, salvation, it's a term used. We need it. It's convenient for us. But what it is, it's man-driven. It's Pelagian. And it's moral reformation. We need to get better. Obviously, you look at the world and you say, things are bad. So we just want to try to get better. And that is a spiritual transformation. So Jonah's a good cure-all. Reading the Bible is a good cure-all. Reading Christianity and liberalism is a good cure-all for this very issue. God appoints supernaturally a fish to rescue Jonah. He could have picked any kind of rescue device he wanted. He could have transported Jonah over to the shore. Remember in Acts 8:40, and when they came out of the water, the Spirit of the Lord carried Philip away, and the eunuch saw him no more, and went on his way rejoicing. But Philip found himself at Azotus, and as he passed through, he was preaching the gospel to all the towns until he came to Caesarea. You're preaching, next thing you know, you're beamed up and dropped someplace else 10 miles down the road. God could have used some big bird or something. God could have done anything he wanted, but why did he use the fish? It could have been floating wreckage of other boats. But the fish is used. Why? For what reason? Because we have a great picture in Matthew chapter 12 about Jesus just as. So Matthew chapter 12, verse 40 says, just as. This is going to be a good picture. Jonah is a good picture of Jesus. It's an example. It's a type. For those of you that are stuck on types and what are the ways that we find a type, and I used to have a stricter definition of a type. Type just is, means example. And so here's a good example. And in Matthew chapter 12, Jesus is confronting people, he's casting out demons, and he says, he who is not with me is against me, and he who does not gather with me scatters abroad. And this is the chapter, Matthew 12, of opposition. Over and over and over, he is being opposed. And it says in chapter 12, verse 38, then some of the scribes and Pharisees answered him, saying, Teacher, we wish to see a sign from you. Show us a sign, Rabbi. I think this is pretty sarcastic. They think he's a false teacher. They think he's a liar. And they call him teacher. And they want a sign. They don't want just another miracle. He had done a lot of miracles. And they want something to be done quickly. Give us another sign. Give us another wonder. I don't think they think he can. I think they're trying to expose him. He doesn't have the power to do it. Let's have a sign. Maybe lightning. That might be good. Thunder. Comets. God does stuff from the sky. He gives manna. Why don't you do some kind of sign? I mean, they've already said you can do things, but we are attributing what you do to Satan. But when the Pharisees heard it, Matthew 12, 24, they said, it is only by Beelzebul, the prince of demons, that this man cast out demons. And as Leon Morris said, Jesus is no circus performer gratifying the appetite of wonders on the part of people who are not serious about spiritual things. They're not trying to prove Jesus was the Messiah. They're trying to prove that he's a wicked man, that he is an imposter. Sign seekers never satisfied. Sign seekers always want more. Sign seekers always have some explanation. Sign seekers don't really want signs. They're trying to prove the opposite, and that's what's going on here. So on No Compromise Radio, what are we trying to do today? We're trying to say that God is a supernatural God, and we're going to have to get back to Matthew chapter 12 next time. God is a supernatural God, and God here is not going to be in front of these Pharisees and false teachers. He's not going to do what they say. I'm stalling now because I don't want to get ahead of myself because I want to save that for next time. It's called A Cliffhanger. Tune in same time, same channel next time. My name is Mike Abendroth. This is No Compromise Radio. Why don't you read John Gresham Machen's Christianity and Liberalism, and you will be glad you did. If not, I'll give you a full refund of the free download.
No Compromise Radio with Pastor Mike Abendroth is a production of Bethlehem Bible Church in West Boylston. Bethlehem Bible Church is a Bible-teaching church firmly committed to unleashing the life-transforming power of God's Word through verse-by-verse exposition of the sacred text. Please come and join us. Our service times are Sunday morning at 10:15 and in the evening at 6. We're right on Route 110 in West Boylston. You can check us out online at bbccchurch.org or by phone at 508-835-3400. The thoughts and opinions expressed on No Compromise Radio do not necessarily reflect those of WVNE, its staff, or management.